Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's up, Bulls fans? I know this is the third time, but this is it. I'm telling you, this is it. This is the No Zones podcast because I am a firm believer that we can't be teaching the youth the values of zone. Man up. Man up. What's up? I'm Tony Gill. I am your host of this podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at TonyGill670. I am producer and I cover the Bulls for 670 The Score. Along with me, he's back after a couple weeks break.
Holiday break.
My guy, Cody Westerlund. What is up, Cody?
I'm just proud of you having a Joe DiMaggio-like three podcast episode streak without a name change. 53 more episodes and you tie Jolton Joe.
Yeah.
For the most prestigious record in sports, perhaps.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the new wave, the new name change. The digital department encouraged me to, you got to pick a name, dude. I was like, all right, I'll pick a name. I was going to keep the bit going of it not having a name after, you know, the first faux pas of it being named after another podcast. But it has a name now, has a home, no zones. How do you feel about zones, Cody?
I'm a huge fan of them.
Really?
When I was in high school, because you just kind of stood out in front. And, like, if you had good teammates, they'd swat everything behind you. We weren't very good at basketball. So, as a basketball fan and as a coach, I'm definitely anti-zone. But when I actually had to play on a bad team, like, it was nice to slow the game down a little bit and lose by, like, 17 instead of 27. And, like, you got roasted as a team collectively instead of just your guy torching you for 35 points when you had to match up with someone better.
I think that's good. It teaches you, like, okay, I don't want to be the weakest link. I have to be better.
Yeah, zones don't teach accountability. Man-to-man defense teaches accountability.
Yeah, we are all here for accountability.
I'm all in on the name then.
Thank you. I appreciate it. All right. On the lineup today, I have a bold prediction that I don't think Cody agrees with.
He said, I can't wait.
I got a bold prediction coming up later. I also have a stat of the week for you guys. And hint, it's for you gamblers out there that enjoy being degenerates. I made a mistake. And I want to discuss it and be honest about it. And I want to apologize. So I'm going to get to that. Jabari Parker temperature check, but first, the team is kind of healthy, about as healthy as it's been since the beginning of the season so far, outside of, you know, Denzel Valentine, but he hasn't been even at camp. So it's as healthy as it's been over this, you know, group's tenure. I want to get your thoughts, Cody, on the way the lineup is now with Chandler Hutchison now as the official starter for this Bulls team, and the current rotation on how it's going so far. It's
the future five, right?
Future five.
Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, Chandler Hutchison, Wendell Carter, and Lauri Markkanen are all first-round draft picks within, I guess Zach was back in 2014, but, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years. It's what the Bulls should be doing for the last half of the season here. They started this after the trade of Justin Holiday, obviously, to Memphis, open up the spot for Chandler. But they got to let those young guys go. And I think it's the right approach. I would say lukewarm on the returns a little bit. Feels like some of these games are getting out of control still because they're losing control because their second unit is a little weak at times. But Chandler Hutchison can't shoot yet. In his NBA career, it's going to be the biggest key, I think. And when I say can't shoot, I mean obviously from the outside there. Because he can go to the rim strong, but that's going to be the biggest key for his career. But it kind of makes for an awkward fit a little bit where Justin Holiday spread the floor a little bit more. But I think one of the keys in this, and Jim Boylan, I believe, has hinted at it a little bit, some people around the Bulls. Justin Holiday shot more than Chandler Hutchison is going to shoot, which is what happens when you have open threes or the team needs to take threes when you're starting. Chandler Hutchison, just by his nature and being a rookie and his style of game, is more of the dirty work, rebounding defense. Wendell Carter Jr., Lowry Markkanen, and Zach LaVine can get more shots. Even if it's just four or five shots a game getting, you know, parsed out to a few other guys if they can shoot two or three more times a game. That's good because they do need to feed Lowry and Wendell a little bit more. So I think it's the right approach. I think it's going to be a big learning curve, and I think we've seen that too in the Bulls' five-game losing streak that they're on.
Yeah, it's certainly been an adjustment period because Justin did take a lot of shots, and he was wide open. So, I mean, teams
were not really, always.
Yeah, I mean, the rotation of the defenses didn't rotate to him as quickly as the other guys, and I think they will do the same with Chandler because, again, like you said, he's not a shooter just yet. He's gonna try and cut to the rim as much as possible and try and get some, you know, offensive rebounds on the weak side of shots. But I think for the overall benefit of the core guys, quote unquote core guys, it's more shots for them. And now there's kind of like the pecking order is starting to kind of form itself now with Justin not being in there, taking up a lot of shots.
What do you have on the pecking order then?
Well, I still don't know who they know between Zach and Lowry who's going to be taking the most shots out of between those two. I think Chris Dunn has settled into the fact that I need to get those guys shots.
That's so huge,
Even though he may have the ball, you know, a lot, I think he'll be more passive in terms of, okay, we have to get Lowry, Zach, pick ever one or two, and Wendell now involved.
I think that the Bulls' first game after the trade against the Pacers, the overtime loss by 3 points, 119-116, like that was the kind of the vision because LaVine and Markkanen got their shots and made the big plays at the end. You mentioned Chris Dunn. That, too, is key. It feels like we say this and that's key for a lot of Bulls players, but when you have a team with so many weaknesses, it doesn't have continuity yet. There's a lot of things to pinpoint. And Chris Dunn just feeding Lowry and Zach LaVine and letting them get theirs and picking his spots is the best, what's best for the team. I think it's best for the team even if he's making a conscious effort to get the ball to Wendell Carter Jr. We saw in the Bulls, you know, 12-point loss to the Blazers on Wednesday night that was a little bit worse than that at times in the fourth quarter. Wendell Carter got 22 points, I think is the third most of the season. Didn't have a ton of shots, but was just really efficient.
Made a three.
With them. Made his first three since November 7th. I think he'd been on a string of 15, nearly 20 in a row that he'd missed and hadn't really felt comfortable in the Jim Boylan era shooting him quite like he did under Fred Hoiberg. So that was a big deal. But look, just by virtue, Chris Dunn doesn't ever need to worry about points. I don't think he really does. Zach LaVine's going to worry about points.
Yes.
He is. Lowry Markkanen isn't going to be quite as open about worrying about points as Zach LaVine, but he's going to.
Yeah, everybody else is worried on Lowry's behalf about him scoring points.
Yeah, and Wendell really, he needs it. I mean, I think he mentioned a few times and after the game in Portland a little bit even about just getting the ball in his hands and such, keeping him in the flow. And that's important. I think the points will come for Chris Dunn just by virtue of still having the ball in his hands so much throughout the game. So he's got to do that, and I think that's what's probably best for the Bulls.
That leads into my apology statement. And you can blame me, Bulls fans. I know I'm supposed to be watching the team and picking up the call me an idiot. That's fine. I agree with this to this degree. For the life of me, I forgot to incorporate Wendell Carter as a part of the core guys.
You can't do that.
You heard me on previous podcasts specifically named Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, and Lowry Markkanen as the core guys. But Wendell Carter needs to be in that conversation if you didn't have him in there already. And last night was a reminder for me that, oh, no, Wendell needs to be involved in this as well in terms of getting his touches. And he mentioned that last night.
just demanding the ball, because all my teammates know I'm a very unselfish player. I'm never going to take any bad shots. So, just me touching the ball is going to keep me engaged throughout the game. So that's what's going to make me play, just stay engaged, especially on the defensive end. If I just touch the ball, I don't have to put it up towards the rim at all. Just me touching the ball, he possesses it, it feels good.
And he's absolutely right on that. He's absolutely correct. Wendell needs to be, I keep calling him Wendell. Wendell needs to be engaged on the offensive end. He needs to get touches. And I think he's a smart enough player to know when to shoot, when not to shoot. It helps. It's going to help him stay engaged on the defensive end where they really need him. It keeps him involved. And he was right on that point.
I'll forgive you on the I didn't consider Wendell Carter part of the core, because there is so much talk about the core three being the Jimmy Butler three they got back in the trade. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that you mentioned with Dunn, Levine, and Markkanen. But I would go as far as say is Wendell's probably the second most important player on this team as far as the core goes.
I wouldn't argue that.
Lauri Markkanen, just because I think of his offensive ceilings higher, and you do need that efficient number one scoring option in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And maybe Zach LaVine gets there. He's got to go to the free throw line more, probably shoot more three pointers to be like efficient at a championship level as the lead scorer. So he's got a long way to go. Lauri Markkanen has a long way to go. I just think the ceiling there might be a little more. But Wendell Carter is the most, his ceiling's the highest on this Bulls team as far as being a two-way difference maker, offensive and defense. So no doubt he is part of the core. And they need to bring him into it a little bit more just by way, like you said, in terms of engagement, because this is a guy that, like, his finish the other night on that three-point play against the Blazers when he got fouled was unbelievable. Got a good pass, but then he showed the patience to wait to get his defender in the air. And then, like, it wasn't quite MJ hang time, but he knew when to jump and when to hang, and then made a tough lefty layup.
His body was kind of underneath the rim as he held it in the air, and then at the last second flipped it up and then right in the basket. I was like, wow.
Like, that's something that it takes skill to do, but it takes instinct as well. Mm-hmm. Like, and not everyone has that instinct. So I think that's why, like, I don't think there's any secret that I've been really high on Wendell Carter Jr., because I just feel like he handles himself superbly from a leadership role as a 19-year-old and showing maturity. But, like, and not just his skills, but, like, those instincts, the things you can't teach. Like, verticality in the NBA is so key now, when
he's
everyone's
got that now.
Hurtling toward the hoop, trying to get fouled or kick it out for threes, because those are the efficient shots and pass to score in the NBA. He's jumping straight up and down. And I know he's had terrible foul trouble and has some really dumb fouls. So that kind of shoots down the argument a little bit. But he has done a very good job with the art of verticality going up. Like, that is something that you don't just get a player in the NBA and teach right away. Like, it's not easy. That's something that's inherent growing up playing basketball.
Yeah, I mean, he had 22 points against the Blazers, 6 rebounds, and he played well until, it got kind of out of hand, because, obviously Blazers are pretty good. But I'm mad at myself that I didn't do it earlier, and I should have, just mainly because of what you said earlier about those were the three that Jimmy created, Jimmy got. And they haven't been around because of various injuries. So the emphasis, obviously, were bringing those three in and making sure those three work out. And I totally forgot about Wendell, I'm sorry. I apologize.
If only Jim Boylan let him play at a pace fast enough to take true advantage of their possible potential talents.
Yeah, and he's built to be versatile. So I can see him running end to end, rim to rim. If you engage him,
all of them, all of the core four, all of the future
they can
five,
they can get up and down the court. And I asked him before they left for their road trip, because he was answering, Jim Boylan was answering the question about bringing up the pace a bit, and he said, "Well, we don't want to slip on defense." So I followed that up with, "Does bringing up the pace automatically mean slippage in defense?" And he said, made a point to say that if you try and play at a pace versus a good team, you're going to lose that battle. And which is understandable to a certain degree. But for this young team, I think it shows off all of their physical attributes if you play a little bit faster. Not saying, you're going to be run and gun, but just play a little bit faster. And I think you can get some benefits from it.
I think we saw the first glimpse of that, obviously, in the overtime loss to the Pacers, which I think was tied around 104-104 at the end of regulation in that game. But so the 119 points the Bulls allowed, obviously, you factor in overtime in that one. But, like, that was the first time it really felt like they played in rhythm offensively. And I would not say that their defense suffered greatly because of the pace they played at in that game. Like, that's totally normal, you know what I mean? Giving up 104 points in regulation.
Yeah, people stop looking at points per game. That's not the end-all be-all of a good defense.
Oh, no. And I think most people understand that defensive rating is a key stat. And since Boylan took over, I mean, the Bulls are 17th in the NBA in defensive rating. Mm-hmm. And, like, they were actually a little better before a few recent games and such and that. So, like, part of his vision has come to fruition a little bit, but you have to be, everyone knows you have to be a two-way team in the NBA to not just win a title, but even contend at the highest of levels. Mm-hmm. So they have to make progress here in the coming weeks in the second half of the season of melding those defensive beliefs, of melding Jim Boylan's key kind of tenets of what he represents as a coach and his philosophy with a more robust offensive system that it just, when you play that slow, and you're not throwing the ball on the block to, like, prime era Shaq or Duncan or Elijah Wan.
Yeah.
Like, you're not giving Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine, these guys, enough time to even be efficient at times in the shot clock. Like, the other thing the Bulls don't do when they play slow, they don't make teams guard them with multiple efforts. We hear about multiple effort defenses, right? Like, the best defenses don't break at the first sign of the other team having an advantage on a possession. Like, they rotate well, they slide over. Well, the Bulls, when you play that slow, that's one or two rotations the defense might not have to play on the back end, and that leads to less efficiency for you. So that's why I think pushing the pace matters. Mm-hmm. It makes the defense have a lot more stress on it. Even if you choose not to shoot right away, it puts more stress on the defense.
100% agree. 100% agree. We're about halfway through the No Zones podcast. I am Tony Gill. You can find me on Twitter at TonyGill67. You can find Cody on Twitter at Cody Westerlin. An ongoing story that has been with the Bulls since they signed him is Jabari Parker. We've seen him go from coming off the bench to starter to back on the bench to now not playing at all, basically. It's been rough watching it. Honestly, it's been rough and awkward being there, you know, during the shoot-arounds, during practices, you know, during post games, and Jabari Parker hasn't played, a former number two overall pick in the draft, only 23 years old, and he can't sniff the court. And it's, I don't know how it's been for you watching it, but it's been really weird. And I'm just coming from a kid that grew up in the Chicago area, who seen Jabari play, who played against Jabari, actually, in a playoff game. It's just weird for me seeing that he came back here, took the $20 million, and now he's not playing.
Yeah, and I see where you're coming from. I don't have that played against him, grew up watching him like you did, quite attachment. Through a basketball prism, I feel like we need a little perspective here.
Okay.
It is, and I say that, and when I say this, I don't mean to criticize Jim Boylan immediately just for the fact he's benching him. Like, what I'm saying, I see Jim Boylan's point, what he's doing with Jabari. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But Shaq Harrison is 6'4". He is a guard who brings nothing to the table offensively whatsoever at all and pesters opposing players when he's on defense. Opposing players usually are who are his size. He's playing undersized power forward, or excuse me, small forward.
Yeah.
While Jabari Parker sits.
Mm-hmm.
And Shaq Harrison entered the year. The Suns cut him.
Yeah.
He did not have a guaranteed contract. He didn't have a job when the NBA season basically started.
Not Shaq Harrison, but it's the truth.
Like, it's just what it is. And from that perspective, it is mind-boggling what's going on that the Bulls paid $20 million to Jabari Parker.
Mm-hmm.
And this is they had Antonio Blakeney, Ryan Arcidiacono, and Shaq Harrison, three guards and three small guards, pretty much, in their backcourt and on the wing here, small forward Shaq Harrison, and Jim Boylan's steadfast in just keeping Jabari benched.
Yeah,
so I get what he's doing, because look, Jabari doesn't have, he's not part of the future, okay? I get that. But it is jarring that they are so bad offensively that the second unit can be an offensive train wreck. And you have someone who has one good skill offense sitting on the bench and you're not playing him.
Right. Yeah, and it's weird because at least I thought that, okay, they at least got to show him off, right, to trade him.
His trade value is zero right
they
now.
They at least would have to show him off. And I thought it was coming when they played, it was the Pacers game, I think, where he was the first guy off the bench. I was like, okay, all right, here it is. Now they have to show him off so they can get something
he didn't play well, for though. Him.
He did not play well. He did not play well. But, again, he hasn't played. He has inconsistent minutes. He doesn't know when he's coming out. I get that aspect from him saying, look, I don't know when I'm going to play. And if I don't play on point, as soon as I get in, I'm getting pulled. Yeah. So I get that from a mentality standpoint when you get into the game. But it's just weird seeing that he would – his excuses for playing Shaq Harrison so many minutes and Antonio Blakeney, who's basically the opposite of Shaq Harrison.
Yeah, he is.
But he won't use Jabari Parker, who does have his, you know, issues on the court in terms of not being the best defender.
Oh, he's awful.
But so is Antonio Blakeney.
Yeah.
And he still gets to play.
Yep.
Why can't you put in Jabari Parker?
He believes that Antonio Blakeney is putting forth more effort, is what Jim Boylan believes. But it's just, look, again, I get what Boylan's doing, but if you're viewing him as any sort of trade candidate, like his value is zero, and you're not giving him any opportunity to work that up, to even like have Jabari have a 15-point game where he shoots like 7 of 12 from the field and to have another team be like, okay, he could be our ninth man and get us like 8 to 10 minutes a game of propping up our offense when our starters are out.
Right.
And even flipping, I mean, there's no way that, look, there's no interest in Jabari Parker right now on the trade market. No. If there was, they would have moved him because it's not like there's no bidding war here, you know? When they had Nico Mirotic last year, they had the Pelicans and the Jazz involved. Like, multiple teams are interested. If they had anyone, any interest for Jabari Parker ahead of the February 7th trade deadline, he'd be moved. But no one wants that $20 million contract on their books this year. You got a match salary the Bulls would have to take back. Bad salary.
Right.
They've shown no inclination to take on long-term bad salary, which I would actually, if I was the Bulls, I would just trade Jabari for another bad contract with one extra year of salary, one more bad year of salary, because I don't see the Bulls, they're not going to be big players in free agency this summer, just the way some of the dominoes are falling. You know what I mean? Like, Kawhi Leonard is either going to stay in Toronto or he's going to go to L.A. probably.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, theoretically, I guess what happens is you don't have room for Kevin Durant if you take on any bad salary for next year.
Right.
Is Kevin Durant coming here?
Probably not.
This is up there. Because like if you could get one more good asset attached with a bad contract in flipping Jabari, I'd be open to it unless you think – like I don't even expect the Bulls to get a meeting with Kevin Durant right now.
Yeah, no.
If they expect to get a meeting, then I think you probably keep at least salary room.
Would that be
open.
The lowest of the low where they're like if – they're the Knicks now, where it's like, you don't need to talk with me.
Yeah, what was it? Who was it?
It was the Knicks.
Was it the Knicks who Durant had like a fake meeting with?
No, he said he's not meeting with
them. What free agent was it? There was a premier free agent in years past who like had maybe it was with the Lakers, a premier free agent.
Was it LaMarcus Aldridge?
Yeah, was it LaMarcus Aldridge? Yeah, who like had a fake meeting with the Lakers, just showed up but had no interest, just to do his agent a favor to keep a good relationship.
LeBron did that. With the Sixers.
Yeah, well, he just sent, like, Rich Paul, I think, or whatnot.
Yeah,
he didn't show up. but, yeah, so, like, you're not getting anything for Jabari in a trade like you do Justin Holiday unless you're willing to take on some sort of bad asset from the other team. You take on a bad contract with a better asset attached as well for that long-term contract. Otherwise, you're just flipping contracts at this point to get Jabari out but not really getting anything. So it's just... it's weird. The Bulls need a little offensive help on the second unit. They got a guy who could help, who could at least can't make his trade value worse.
Right.
And they're just ignoring him. And look, I do understand everything that's gone on with his lack of effort and hustle. I think we've both criticized him a fair deal about that, and rightfully so. But
that's to me, that's the coach's job to find that effort out and get that out of him. You can't just if Jim Boylan is supposed to be spirit guy, if he's supposed to be rah-rah guy, interject energy into the team guy, why can't he do it with Jabari?
That's, you know, some of it.
He says all the time, oh, me and Jabari talk. Oh, Jabari knows. Or Jabari this, Jabari that. But you can't, you don't have that relationship yet with to say, hey, I don't know what's going to happen in the future, you know, with you on this team, but you can help us right now.
Yeah,
in some way, in some sort of capacity, you can help us right now. I'm going to go to you in these spots instead of, we'll see how I feel game to game.
And along the Jabari storyline too, I just got to rant a little bit, you know, once in a while here.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot stand this. Well, don't play Jabari because he's not part of the future line or excuse. Not part of the future. No reason to play him. You do realize that there are probably 3 to 4 people on this team that are part of the future. Okay. There's up to 6.
So you're saying Antonio Blakeney isn't.
In the best world, in the best situation for the Bulls, their current future 5 young guys are all part of their future. Bobby Portis is, and then Ryan Arcidiacono sticks on the roster and is like a 10th or 11th man. You know what I mean? That's best case scenario.
Yeah.
7 of them. It's probably closer to 3 or 4 who actually matter for the future. So don't justify playing Shaq Harrison, Antonio Blakeney,
Felicio
bum minutes, Robin Lopez trade candidate. Don't tell me that you can't play Jabari because he's not part of the future, because hardly anyone coming off the bench is part of the future. Get rid of that garbage explanation and punt it to the moon or the sun.
I'm definitely going to put some type of production on your rant.
It's the mind-boggling, like, there's just, most of these guys aren't part of the future.
Right.
Like, Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, if they don't coalesce and work out well together, one of them is getting traded for another young player or assets or draft picks, whatever. You know, like, it is possible that Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter are the only two of the 16 players on the team under contract who are part of the future. Yep. So just get rid of that argument and explanation. I feel a lot better now.
There you go, folks. Cody Weschelin.
Thank you.
Dropping the fire. The hammer.
What's next?
All right. We're almost out of here. So let's get to a few things that I want to get to before we're out. First of all, the stat of the week for all you gamblers and degenerates. We are recording this on a Thursday, right? The Bulls play on Friday against Golden State.
Yep.
So even though it's Golden State, pay attention, guys. Bulls cover 55% of the time after a loss.
What's that tell? I'm trying to think what that tells us. Coming off of a loss, with the spirits down a little bit after a loss, slightly more than half the time, they at least don't totally embarrass themselves and rise slightly above expectations.
Yes. So they still lose the majority of the time. It's just they just lose a little bit closer after a loss.
I like it. I think there's something to be exploited right there. I was just checking the line real quick. Looks like Warriors minus 15.5 after their, 49-point win?
Yeah, against the Knicks.
The first Bulls-Warriors matchup was like 49 points, I think.
Yeah.
Something. I might be getting the previous year's Bulls Warriors game mixed up with the most recent one. I just know every time the Bulls and Warriors play, it gets out of control.
Can they get within 15? I say they can. I think they can.
I just have no confidence in the second half of that game, even if they're playing hard and it gets to like 10, 12 of them keeping it within 15, 16 points. Like it feels like a 20-point loss for the Bulls, even if they play their butts off and play really well and play hard.
Okay. Well, I will check on that. You're saying that
might inch
cover?
Its way up to 57% by the time we update you on the stat of the week next week.
I think they do cover, but we'll check on that and we'll get back to you guys.
Was that
on
your bold prediction?
Week.
What was your bold prediction?
That is not my bold prediction.
Oh,
here it goes, guys. Tony's bold prediction. I think at the end of the season, the Bulls will only have the 5th worst record.
I think covering against the Warriors is a bolder prediction than that.
I think it's bold because the hope and wish now is it's a tank season. and you just want to see those four guys, sorry, Wendell Carter again, play well in a loss. But I don't think it's going to be enough to get a guy that matters in the draft, and it's going to be kind of disappointing.
Well, this could also be mutually exclusive. Like, mm-hmm. they could, your prediction could be right, and you think it's not going to be mm-hmm. enough or tangentially exclusive, something like that. But then they get lucky in the lotto with the flattened odds, and mm-hmm. odds, and they do get the 1, 2, or 3 pick by hopping up in the odds. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, that could still happen. You could be right. Like, this flattening of the odds, it used to be 25% chance for the lottery when you're the worst team. Now it's 14, 14, 14% mm-hmm. on those first three teams. I think it drops like 12.5, 12% after that. Like, it's really much more of a toss-up. You know what I mean? So their goal should be to be one of the three worst teams mm-hmm. Because then you have those highest 14% odds. But the other key part in this, and you may know more about the NBA draft than me, and this is what we need to, the prospects, pay more attention to as the year goes later mm-hmm. and we realize the draft. Like, how many good players are there going to be in this draft? Like, how many players in the college level would we quantify as difference makers? Because if it's a 5-player draft, having the worst record is key, because even if your lottery ball doesn't get pulled, you have the worst record, you can only fall to number 5. You can fall 4 places back. 4 ping pong balls get selected before yours. If you have the 3rd worst record or 4th worst record and your ping pong ball doesn't get drawn, you fall back to 7 or 8. And all of a sudden, 7 was kind of the Bulls the last 2 years with Markkanen and Carter. But those were what? 7, 8, 9, 10 player drafts of, like, difference makers, you know? Like, Donovan Mitchell still getting picked at 13. He's better than a difference maker, but mm-hmm. just guys who matter. If this draft, it's weaker, we know that. I just don't know where that cutoff is yet.
That's why in the bold prediction, it's also kind of one of my fears, is because I know this draft isn't as deep.
Yeah.
And I know that even if getting closer than where they have been at 7, that it's not going to make a difference this year. It's Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, and it's a point guard out of Murray State that I can't remember right now.
We'll learn his name as the draft gets closer.
Yeah, and Bol Bol.
Who got hurt. His draft stock is falling.
So, again, if they finish with the 5th worst record, because Cleveland is taking the cake right now, in my opinion. They picked up campaign. They are on the tank train for real.
I cannot wait to watch NBA TV highlights and cut into a Cavs game and campaigns getting back on point guard, man.
Phoenix is obviously awful. Well, the Knicks, I think, are going to be awful.
What you're basically saying in this is that the Bulls right now are tied for the 3rd worst record in the NBA. What you're saying is that they're going to finish the year better than the Hawks.
Yes.
And that the Suns, Cavs, Knicks, and Hawks will all be slightly worse than the Bulls.
Yes.
I think the Bulls should make it their quest to be one of the 3 worst teams. I don't think they can tank all they want, and mm-hmm. I don't think there's any way the Bulls tanking all they want unless someone gets hurt or they make up a fake injury. I don't think they're going to finish with fewer wins than the Cavs. I think the way the schedule plays out too, mm-hmm. the Bulls' schedule is going to be easier in the second half. I was checking out some of the analytics on that the other day, all the schedule makers and such. The Bulls' schedule gets slightly easier. Mm-hmm. And I think the Suns, just by virtue of playing in the Western Conference, they're going to, throughout the rest of the year, it's a tougher conference. Like, that's going to play out where it's going to be hard for the Bulls, I think, to, with the healthy, assuming these guys stay healthy. They can't afford to, like, make up a fake injury and shut down Zach LaVine with knee soreness a little bit like they did last year, which actually made sense coming off the ACL mm-hmm. tear. But you do that this year with like 12 games left. That's 12 games of observation and evaluation you don't get between the core four there that you've talked about. So I think just the way the schedules play out and such that it will be hard to be the worst or second worst for the Bulls. But you're right in that range.
Yeah, it's I mean, I hope so. I hope that, you know, in the perfect situation, we see these guys mesh, the core guys mesh, and they lose in close games. That would be the perfect where they can drop, but I just don't see it. If I had to pick a team out of those 5 that's the best right now of the 5, it's the Bulls.
Yeah. They have played the – they beat the Hawks on the road earlier this year. The Bulls did, and the Hawks have two more wins than them. But I kind of actually agree with you on this. Like, I think the Bulls could be better than the Hawks by the end of the year. So I guess if I had to pick one spot where they'll finish, fifth worst record in the NBA sounds pretty much right to me. Although, again, I think they should aim for that. Somehow aim for the bottom three to have
that 14% They have to get really creative. They have to get really creative to try and find a way to the bottom.
Yeah, or just, I mean, get really unlucky sometimes.
Yeah.
That helps too. Maybe maybe every opponent catches fire from three-point range. Like, I mean, given how crazy the Bulls have been over the past few years, like, I don't really rule anything out of, like, the realm of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I could still – I mean, they're going to come back from this West Coast road trip probably with four more losses and an 0-5 trip.
Agreed.
The Warriors-Jazz is one of the toughest back-to-backs in the NBA you can probably draw up. You know what I mean? And no LeBron against the Lakers, but it's going to be 2 days of party in L.A. before they take the floor the night before. Yeah, and
everybody
fails
that L.A. test.
And then I can't imagine the Bulls winning in Denver, the team with the best record in the Western Conference. Like, so they could be staring at 10-35 when they come back to the United Center and doing a lot of damage there in the bottom of the standings.
But they got that energy and spirit.
Do they?
Energy and spirit.
They do sometimes.
Provided by Jim Boylan.
They do have more energy and spirit. They just need a little more pace and continuity on the offensive end.
Last quick thing before we get out of here. The Bulls probably won't have a representative in the All-Star game. I was looking at the second returns. Derrick Rose, still number two.
Yeah.
In the West among guards.
I think
he's going to get in. But going back to the Bulls really fast, Zach LaVine is the only one that registered. He's got
seventh in the East.
In the East, and I don't think he's going to make it. I don't think he's going to get voted in.
Yeah, either. So the coaches come out and pick after the fans, media, and players vote.
Mm-hmm.
So Zach LaVine would have to get picked by the coaches, basically. But I don't know. I don't know who would he vault. Like, maybe it comes down to, like, him or Bradley Beal at the end, but
Bradley Beal's been playing.
Bradley
Beal's
a better basketball player. Yeah. So, and there's a little wiggle room there, too, where they can go a little bit more toward front court guys at the end choosing.
And Wade's got to get in, right?
Yeah. I mean, ceremoniously, last year, basically, in the NBA, I would assume so. Like, LeBron might no-show at the All-Star game if Dwayne isn't invited, you know? Like, I mean, he'll wield that power. I'm not showing up unless Dwayne gets voted in.
There's possibility.
And, oh, by the way, NBA All-Star voting can't possibly be 100% on the up and up. The year Zaza Pachulia almost got into the All-Star game.
I was rooting for that
on
so
his
hard.
Own account. Is he from Georgia?
Yeah,
I think. The country,
war-torn
not
Georgia.
Yeah, the country, war-torn. Not the state. Like, if that's possible to almost get him in there, like,
I was rooting for
they're sliding people in that need to be in, you know, like, they're not leaving
Luka,
a legend
up
like
there in votes.
They're not leaving a legend like Dwayne
Luka
Wade.
Make it
huh?
in.
Oh, yeah, I think he will. Like, the top, like, 9-10 in the West is pretty set, but Luka's going to have big fan voting, so even if he doesn't get in the fan voting, I think that will probably be reflective of how people view him.
And players respect him.
Yeah, like, I mean, you can make the case just with his clutch play at the end of games that, like, you can elevate him a little bit more maybe than his stats would say and such, just the presence he had. I'm like, you can put the people in that people want to see, you know? Like,
it's going to be tough. Like, Damian Lillard is seventh in the West. He may not get in.
Yeah, I think the coaches are – because he's gotten really mad. Didn't he get snubbed 1 year? And, oh, boy, he went on a rampage, like, just going on the record to every media member that would talk about him, saying how he was disrespected, then going out and throwing up a really good second half of the season and basically – saying it's all because his all-star snub and everything. So probably no Bulls. You said you think Derrick Rose will get in. I don't know that he will because he's second in the fan voting, but that's not taking into account the initial rounds of the players and media. And I don't think the players and media will vote Derrick as highly as the fans do. So then he won't be a starter among the first 10. So then it falls to the coaches, and then they have to make really tough decisions like between – Damian Lillard and Derrick Rose, stuff like that. You know what I mean? Klay Thompson's in there too.
Yeah, if it's that just kind of overwhelming, I'm thinking just based on the fans' perspective, if fans really want him in, it's not like he's not a six man of the year candidate. I mean, Lou Williams almost got in last year.
Yeah, almost.
And the coaches almost put him in. So I think if Derek kind of keeps this pace up, I think he may slip in. But again, they still got to get Damian Lillard in there. If they had a choice between Damian Lillard and Derrick Rose.
Oh, yeah. And I think Klay Thompson, Russell Westbrook got to get in there. Stuff like that above Derrick, at least, in some of those tougher decisions. So it'll be something fun to keep an eye on.
So that was the No Zone podcast this week. Thanks a lot to Cody Westerlund for coming back, returning to us. I missed you, Cody.
I missed ranting. I missed you, too.
Thank you. I was waiting for that.
Yeah. Just got to let the shoe drop there a little bit.
You can follow Cody on Twitter at Cody Westerlund. He's got a lot of good stuff right there with the quotes and the stats and the numbers and stuff like that. Great follow. You can follow me on Twitter at TonyGill670. You can send your questions to me. Topics you want to discuss about the Bulls, send them right there and I got you. I promise you I got you. I will see it in my mentions and I will discuss it for you. Okay? All right. Thanks a lot for checking the No Zones podcast. We'll see you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.